Morning, everyone. Welcome to part four. Just before I start, I'll just mention this because I mentioned this last week. I talked about that couple in Israel that we were going to interview. Remember that? Anyway, we did it. It was unbelievable. So I just want to they're such both amazing people.
Did you
it's
on Facebook?
Yeah, no, it's on Facebook recorded. No, and we're going to download it on a video. So, but I just want to recommend you can't. Yeah, no. But you can't listen to the audio. You've got to see them.
It's on Facebook. It's a video.
I'll explain in a second. So it was. So just for those who weren't here last week. So I there's this couple, and it was more of just the lesson was more of a relationship issue. But it's a couple in Israel who both grew up totally secular, and married secular, and then he became very religious, but like totally religious, and she remained totally secular. And in the beginning, it was very, very hard, as you can imagine, because the gap was very big. I don't know if you know, like Israel is like not traditional, like it doesn't work like that. Israel, when you're not, like I mean, they didn't even fast Yom Kippur, like that, you know, there was like nothing. I mean, they had no connection. And the first year they found it very hard, and then they worked it through, and they're the most amazingly loving, respectful couple. And just you watch them interact, just they're both very, very special people with incredible values and incredible relationship priorities and concepts. So anyway, I just want to recommend it because we'll put out the video because it was on Facebook. We'll download it as a proper video and you can watch it. So recommending. Just thought I'd mention it. Okay. So we're doing lessons from 2020. It's called Eat the Fruit, Throw Away the Peel. So just a quick review from last week. Last week we talked about two things. First of all, we talked about the concept of responding in general to something that happens, so that everything that happens needs a response. The concept of Ashkachar Pratit, nothing happens for nothing, everything happens for a purpose. We said purpose, not reason, because we don't understand the reason. And everything that happens is a call of action. And we discussed the Vayikra, the call of God with a small aleph, that you can miss the aleph. Vayikra means it just happens. Vayikra means I'm calling you, I'm asking you to respond. And we have to hear that call from action. But we discussed the two types of responses. So often we rely and we outsource to a communal response, a leadership response, a political response, a government response. But that's nice, but that's not the whole picture. What's really important is the individual response. As we mentioned, when God gave the Torah at Mount Sinai, he said, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Hashem, your God in the singular. It was a collective thing. We became a nation. It was communal, but he spoke to us individually, and that's why we talked about that individual response and understanding the power of every individual, understanding the power that we have, that we all really need to respond, that we need to... Everyone needs to give, everyone needs to help, everyone has something that they can contribute, which is different to the others, and therefore that's such an important concept, not to delegate or outsource it or think I'm not significant, so therefore what am I going to do? But we each need to have that individual responsibility. So that was the concepts, just to refresh your memory, what we talked about last week. Today, I wanted to talk about another topic, and that is the concept generally of managing change, right? Which is really not a 2020 topic, but it is, because change in 2020, I guess, was on steroids, so therefore if there's any time that we have to think about what it means to manage change, this is the year, or that was the year, I should say. And what 2020 did to a lot of people was a few things. Either it forced them into reflecting how to confront change, and change can be confronting. And many people did it amazingly. Many people passed the test with flying colors, right? Some didn't. Some struggled. And no judgment, of course, but different people respond different ways. But that's in a year where change was dramatic and change was very quick, right? I mean, in fact, it's like this week, a year ago. I think more or less. I'm just thinking, because I think in terms of Purim, right? Purim is tomorrow. Purim, we're already speaking about it. I remember here we had a big Purim party. We didn't exactly know what to do yet, but all we did was we had two helpers. We made them wash their hands and put on gloves. But other than that, the Purim party went ahead as normal. And then 4 days later, just the whole world changed. It was like amazing, right? Shuls closed down. Everything closed down. We went into lockdown. It was like crazy. But that's not the only change that happens. Change is something that constantly happens, right? We all have changes that happen to us a change by definition is something that is different to what we expected, okay? Or different to our routine. So often people go through changes that might be harsh changes, changes in relationships, which could be very difficult. Unexpected changes, it could be career changes, a loss of job, all kinds of things, right? You expect something to continue. I think that's the sort of change you're talking about if we're talking about 2020, right? It's the kind of change where you are in a routine, you're in a pattern, you're in a sort of context where you think it's just going to continue. And then sometimes, and then all of a sudden it doesn't. And what it really means is that the change then becomes a loss of expectation. That's how human beings are. We expect things to, there are things that happen every day. We expect them to happen, we take it for granted. We expect the sun to rise from the east and set in the west, and it just happens. But we also built some of those things into our lifestyle. We just expect things to happen. We expect our job to be there when we get there. We expect the family to run the way it runs, our relationships to happen the way they happen, things to the day to turn out, how I've planned, and so on and so forth, right? So in this past year, it really highlighted for us the importance of realizing it's not quite like that. It never is like that, actually. But nevertheless, it really sort of reminds us that we need to reflect on how to handle change, essentially. So I just want to make a couple of points before we get into the strategy, but every change is hard. Change is always hard. Because that's just the nature of human beings. We are creatures of habit. We like things to be in routine. There's a sort of a sense of security of when things happen the way they always happen. So much so, we have this in the history of the Jewish people, which is astounding, but we know that when the Jews left Egypt, 4/5 of the Jewish nation didn't want to go. You'd imagine, a nation is in slavery for 210 years, the last 86 of which were terribly harsh, under persecution, oppression. You'd imagine they would welcome that change, right? And yet 4/5 of the Jewish people didn't want to go, and they didn't go. They passed away during the plague of darkness, as we are told, right? So the nation that left Egypt was only 1/5 of the whole nation, right? That's a minor detail not everyone's aware of. But why? Because they didn't want to go to change. And even the ones that did go and were very happy to go and had faith to follow and to sort of, as soon as something went wrong, they're not sure where the next meal was coming from and things were going well, but as soon as there was something wrong, they said things like, Zacharnu et hadagah, we remember the fish we used to eat in Egypt. Do you remember how you used to fish? Do you remember what the context was? No, but we remember the fish. There we had fish and cucumbers, it says in the Pasuk. We were able to eat for free. Under slavery, under oppression. But that's what people are. We get very used to something, and even when it's a good change, right? How much more so when it's a challenging change? The other point that's important to highlight is, we think to ourselves, why should we think about this now? We're sort of going back to normal, hopefully. But the truth is, change always comes upon us in different forms. And the truth is that the best time, this is a general principle with all things, but the best time to think about change is when change isn't happening. Right? And that's a general concept. Now, we don't like to do that because when change isn't happening, we think change will never happen. Everything's just going to continue normal. Right? But the truth is that the best time to think about it when change isn't happening, because that's the time to reinforce our strategy, to reinforce our resilience, to reinforce our, the adrenaline of our soul, the muscles of our existence sort of thing, right? So, and that's by the way, that's a general principle. I think I've shared this many years ago, but I once read, a beautiful idea from Lord Rabbi Jacobowitz, who was the chief rabbi before Rabbi Sacks, right? And he said, based on a verse in Tehillim, in Psalms, we say it on Friday night, it's a chapter in Psalms where we say to God, Lahagid baboker chasdecha, we tell in the morning, we communicate your kindness, God's kindness, ve'emunatcha balelot, and your faith when it's nighttime. So he said, what does that mean? What's kindness by day, faith at night? So he said the following, he said, our lives divide into two parts. There's parts which is daytime, where things are clear and good and bright and things seem to be going okay. Then there's Leilat, nighttime, where things are tough and confusing and there's lack of clarity, right? So he said, if you want, and it's the nighttime of our lives where we really need to dip in deep and access the faith. But he said, the verse is telling us, if you want to have faith at night, you have to talk about and acknowledge God's kindness when it's daytime. In other words, you have to reinforce your connection when it's daytime so that when night comes, you have the power and the strength to access it, right? So the same thing over here. The best time to think about change is when change isn't happening. So it's a good lesson to reflect on. It's a good concept to talk about because change is always going to happen. We're always going to go through times where we have change. And the best time to actually discuss it and confront it and to reflect upon it is when things are actually fairly normal. So, in thinking about this idea and in reflecting on sort of what is it that we need to have, what is it that we need to absorb or internalize to really confront or experience change in a positive way, in an effective way. So what I'd like to share with you, I think, is divided into three parts. Sort of, you know, we always like to simplify things into sort of a formula, right? So I think the formula for change is three things: identity, hope and persistence, and destination. And I'm going to break that down a little bit. So what I mean by identity, it's something we've talked about before, but I think it's such an important thing. Who are we? What defines us, right? And when I talk about identity, where I'm really going is to explore the concept of values and convictions, right? Now, we have, obviously, in modern day literature, we have a lot spoken about in terms of value-based living. I once did a course on time management, which was time management based on values, right? But it's more than just values, right? I think when we talk about values, to really have values, in other words, to really live a life based on values, actually means that those values need to become who we are, needs to identify us, right? In other words, what we are shouldn't be what we do, but it should be what we believe in. Now, in Jewish thinking, of course, this is fundamental, right? Because everything's about purpose and meaning. That's what the Torah is for. That's what the whole existence is for. We didn't just land here. We land here for a reason, for a purpose, right? And when I say our identity, because what it does is, and it causes us to revisit an issue which we've talked about many times, is that we have two worlds, right? We experience two worlds. We experience what I call the world of doing and the world of being. Okay. Now, the truth is that most of our lives are spent in the world of doing, right? We do, and we should, because the truth is that even if we have values, We can only implement those values by doing. We have to do something to implement those values, right? If we sit and rely in bed all day, it's not going to work, right? Even if we have plenty of values. The values can only be... The world of values come from the world of being. It's who we are. But they express themselves, they get implemented in the world of doing. We have to do, right? But the question is, who are we? In other words, are we the world? Is what we do that defines us? Or is it who we are and what we believe in that defines us? I think I shared this a few years ago when it was the first, the Shabbat project. But in Judaism, this is actually very much divided between the world of the weekday and the world of Shabbat, right? Because the weekday is a time of doing. That's what weekday is. It's when we do melacha, when we work, when we do stuff, we accomplish, we achieve. Each person achieves different things. Each person has their career path, has their accomplishments, has their things which they focus on. And the weekday is very, very much spent on the world of doing. Shabbat, in fact, the word Shabbat, and that's why the Shabbat concept is not only important on Shabbat, it's important every day. But the word Shabbat means actually to stop. Cease, that's what it means, right? Which is connected to resting, but it's the idea of stopping, right? Almost canceling. Because we find, in Hebrew, you often find words that mean different things. They're all connected. So it's interesting, we're coming up to Pesach soon, right? So before Pesach, there's this concept of destroying the chametz, right? And that's learned from a word in the Torah called tashbitu, which is the same word as Shabbat. Like you get rid of, you let go, kind of thing. That's what it is, right? So Shabbat is stopping and letting go of something. Different context means different things, right? So what is Shabbat? What's the concept of Shabbat? Shabbat is when we stop, we cease, we let go of the world of doing, and we enter into the world of being. That's what Shabbat is. That's the essence of Shabbat, right? Why do we do that? Not because we often need to stop doing, to reflect and to access and to go into the world of being, to understand who we really are. What are our values? What do we believe in? What really is our identity, right? Now, of course, we don't have Shabbat every day. And the reason for that is because we're not supposed to have Shabbat every day. We're supposed to do. But we're supposed to do, but not be identified by the doing. And we're supposed to do being inspired by the being inspired by the values that we have, right? In order to do that, we have to stop and reflect on our values, right? So in other words, that's the formula. I'm just bringing it in the Shabbat and the weekdays because that's the formula. I mean, in Kabbalah, they talk about having a moment of Shabbat every day because there's like a prayer, for example, in Kabbalah. It says like it's the moment, it's the Shabbat moment of a normal day, right? In other words, every so often we need to stop. It's the idea of stopping, right? But the idea is that the Shabbat being, the values of Shabbat, the values of who we are when we stop and we think about them, or we connect to who we really are, what we believe in, and what our values of life and what do we want out of life, and what our purpose is, and so on and so forth. That then needs to inspire and infuse the rest of the week. It needs to infuse the world of doing. I'll just tell you a little story that I heard as a child once. Tell a story of two Hasidim who were once talking. I'm sure I've told the story before, but it's a nice story. There were two Hasidim and they were having a chat, and had a dilemma. What was the dilemma? They were two Hasidim who really experienced Shabbat in a very deep way. They it was beautiful. They really felt uplifted and inspired and spiritual and so on. And they had this dilemma that isn't really the Shabbat. Why? Because they said, you know, every Shabbat they come home and there's a beautiful table set. The ambiance is conducive. There's candles that are there. The chalot are different. They sit down. They share. They're not in a hurry. Everyone around the table, they share words of wisdom, divrei Torah, inspiring stories. They sing, there's a lot of zmirot, they sing a lot of beautiful tunes. They pray slowly. It's a different kind of day, right? So, and they feel very, very different. So they ask themselves, is this real? Like, is it the holiness of Shabbat that's doing it to us? Or maybe it's just the environment, right? Because they're taught that Shabbat is a very holy day and it's a very spiritual day, and then the world is elevated on Shabbat and different things happen to and so on, right? So they started, they're going to experiment. They're going to gather together the two families on a Wednesday night, and they're going to create Shabbat, right? Like the table, same chalot, the same songs, the same menu, the same divrei Torah, the same spiritual inspiration. They're going to pray first, they'll pray slowly, they'll say the Shema slowly, they'll do it exactly like Shabbat. They did the whole thing, and lo and behold, they felt exactly the same as Shabbat. So now they were, oh, well, this is crazy. And it bothered them because they always thought that's like a special day, right? So it must be the day, they always thought it was the day of Shabbat, but looks like it's not. It's just, you can make Shabbat on every day. Like, I mean, what's the difference? And it bothered them, so they decided to take a trip to their Rebbe, whoever their Rebbe was, and present to him their dilemma, right? So they go, and they share with him the problem, and he says, you don't have to worry. It is the Shabbat. Only thing is, Shabbat is not isolated from the week. There's a spirit of Shabbat that infuses the whole week, right? Because that's the whole purpose. The whole purpose is that when you enter into the world of doing, when you go to work, when you eat, when you sleep, when you do business, when you go about your weekday routine, you should do it with the inspiration and the values and the belief and the whole upliftedness. You should be guided by Shabbat, but normally it's in the background. What's in the background is the Shabbat energy, which is your values and who you really are, coming from the day of Shabbat, and then it just becomes the foundation of everything you do during the day. But if you stop during the week and you reconnect to that, you'll reconnect to the Shabbat energy. It's just you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to keep going during the week, right? With short breaks for, you know, spiritual things. But so the concept, why I'm telling you the story, is because that's the idea. The idea is that we have two worlds. We have the world of values, the world of, which hopefully become who we are. What's sad is often in society it's not that way. People don't stop to examine their values, and people just keep on going and keep on doing and go from one thing to another to the point that what they do defines them. And that's what we find in society very much today, that people are defined by the successes of the world of doing, right? How do you say what's a successful human being? But people don't often say, oh, he's a very successful human being. You know why? Because when he was 25, he used to get angry a lot. But now when he's 55, he hardly gets angry. right? That would be a successful human being in a value sense. Exactly. You ever heard people say that? No. People talk about a successful person as a person who made a lot of money or achieved a lot of things, or is a leader, or changed, I don't know, whatever, right? Might even be good things, but it's all got to do with the world of doing. Now, people should have success in the world of doing, and people should experience all kinds of blessings, but they should be infused, and they should be, what really should define the person is the world of values, right? So, people need values, and every so often we need to stop and reflect about what those values are and what does it mean to have those values. Again, in Jewish thinking, it becomes easier because we have guidance and we have values and we have lessons and we have concepts that guide us with those values. But we need to stop and we need to think about what they are. We need to think about, do they really define us wherever we are? So why is that so important to the topic that we talked about?
But they're very interlinked, like they aren't separate. Like as I mean, actions speak louder than words. So you can sit in your sense of being, saying, I'm a tzaddik, I'm a good person, I give tzedakah, I'm kind of that, but then you don't actually, or you know, you don't physically get up and go do charity work physically.
No, 100%. So it's but correct. But the action based on values which happen during the world of doing, only come because there's a world of being. Because you stop and you examine what your values are, right? In other words, that's exactly the point. They are interlinked. That's why you're not supposed to. That's why I'm using the Shabbat model, because you're not supposed to have Shabbat every day. For most part, you're actually supposed to live your values. But you're only going to live your values, and you're only going to have your values define you if you stop once in a while and reflect about what your values are and what your convictions are, right? And a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't stop and think, right? Don't spend time. I mean, Stephen Covey talks about this in the Seven Habits, right? That you need to make a mission statement. And how many people actually do that? How many people actually stop and actually think about that once in a while? I mean, the way he puts it is like what my eulogy would sound like, or what I'd like it to sound like, right? Bit of a morbid way of doing things, but okay, right? But that's the same idea, right? Like, what I want them to say about me, like, in you know, when I'm 120, that I... Yeah, so, yeah, that kind of thing, right? Now, the great thing about values is, and this is why it's so related to this topic, and we've talked about this before, but it's just important to revisit, is that values don't change. What do you mean they don't change? No matter what happens, values are you. So no matter what happens outside of you, your values don't change. The world of doing constantly changes. The world of values never change. Now, when I say never change, it doesn't mean they never change. I mean to say a person could gain new values, a person could discover new values. But I mean, once you have values, once they're part of who you are, that's you. And the real you doesn't change, right? And that's why it is critically important, the concept of values, when change happens. Because when change happens, you're thrown into an uncertain world, you're thrown into an unstable world, you're thrown into a world which you're not familiar with. And if the world around you, which is the world of doing, is what defines you, then you're a mess. Because it's a new world. Right? Which is exactly what happened. And what happened last year is exactly that. And it's hard. I mean, I'm talking about like it's easy, these values things, but it's not that easy, right? Because we do live in the world of doing. And there are many people who found it very tough, and especially financially, when their world of doing changed, and it did different things to different people, right? But when a person really lives by values and has a course of action in the world of doing which they follow to live those values, then when change happens, if they really connect it to their values, it makes it much easier to handle. It's easy. It's not easy. It's never easy. But at least you reconnect who you are and you say, I haven't changed. Right? I told a story many, many years ago, and so it's a simple story, so it's not greatness. But and also I'm not successful at this all the time. So you know, I always tell you, I only tell you stories that work. Okay. At that time, exactly. So I don't want you to get the wrong impression, like, you know. I'm perfectly human, so I have all human struggles everyone else has. But I had an aha moment about this once, because it struck me once. Just, it was a simple story, it was a stupid story, but it struck me about this concept when I really started to think about this. It was many, many years ago, it was before I could drive. No, it wasn't many, many years ago.
It must be you driving. grandpa.
What's that?
You're a grandpa.
Yeah, yeah. I learned how to drive before I became a grandpa. That's true, but it wasn't that long ago. But anyway, it's when I couldn't drive, put it that way. And we were still up in Bellevue Hill when we had the two houses there in Shtibl there. And I used to go every Thursday to the city at that time. I used to give a shiur in the city for lunchtime, right? And I think I've told the story before. And it was one Thursday, and it was a very, very busy day. I had tons to do. I mean, we always think we have tons to do, right? And all the things we have to do is really important and so on. I mean, we discover that we don't do them, the world still exists somehow. But anyway, we most of the time, we have tons to do, right? And I did. I really had a packed schedule, you know, a lot to do. And I used to go to the city, so I used to get a lift to the junction and then take a train in. And then when I would come back to the junction, I'd normally take a taxi back to the office. In those days, I used to give the taxi company a lot of business, and that's how I used to make it. Okay. That day was pouring when I got back. So I come to the junction.
No taxis.
And there's no taxis. And it was pre-iPhone days, incidentally. So I had a phone, but that didn't help. They didn't help me very much. I can call a taxi, but they wouldn't come. There was a taxi rank there. And I couldn't walk. Like, sometimes if there's no taxis, I just walk. I'd walk, which is probably a good thing, because that's exercise, right? It was like a 15-minute walk from the station back to the, which is okay, but I couldn't, because I had no umbrella. It was pouring, literally pouring with rain, and I'm standing there undercover where I would normally wait for a taxi. And I could see this is going to take, I'm going to be stuck here for like a half an hour at least, right? And of course, what do? You start to get tense, right? Because I have so much to do. And can't do them. It's not like now where you can do a lot of stuff wherever you are, but and it's that moment, actually, I was starting to get really, really stressed, as one does, and I thought to myself, like, this is ridiculous, let me just calm down, and what can I do now? In other words, maybe not these words, maybe not this terminology, but I was thinking, so what is important to me? I happened to have something in my pocket, which was a little safer, it was a book of a Mishnah or something, whatever it was, right? I said, fine. So then, obviously, I can't do anything else. Everything has gachaprat it. So it means I'm not meant to be doing anything else. But I am the same person, so I can still accomplish. To me, what does accomplishing mean? There's lots of things I could do. I happen to have a book of Mishnah in my pocket, so I can study. I study anyways once in a while, right? So I'll study more today. And it was great. I had spent a half an hour. Couldn't be disturbed. No one could really contact me. There was no interaction. And it was an amazing moment. I'm not saying I always do this. I'm just saying that but that's exactly what it is, right? I mean, it's just an hour. It didn't really destroy my day anyway, and it's fine. But I'm just saying the concept is like that, right? The concept is that things change which cause the world of doing to change. But they don't change you. And that's why the first thing that is so important to handling change is this concept of values. Because at the end of the day, when we finish a day, right? And we look back, just like I said before about successful people. We go to sleep at night and we look back at the day, which is a good idea, by the way. We also, if we define our day by values, then we need to think, was this a successful day? And then we need to know that, how do we find success? Again, the same thing. So really what we should do is every single night we should go to sleep and think back and say, was this a successful day? But then define that. Successful day doesn't mean how much I got done or what I organized or what I achieved. But how well did I live my values today? Right? So my day was completely shot, let's say, and nothing worked out, but I stayed calm. I didn't snap at people. I was good. I helped someone out. I found something else to do that was valuable. Okay, so what didn't happen today will happen tomorrow. But was my day successful? And that's a real successful day. Now that kind of mindset, not easy to implement, but that kind of mindset actually makes no difference what's happening in the world of doing. Because the values are the same. It's just how you live your values. Obviously, you adapt. So if you live your values a different way, but you can always live your values. You can always find a way to live by your values. It's just maybe differently. And that's a successful day there. Now, the truth is, because it is Purim tonight and tomorrow. So let's connect this to the concept of Purim. That's exactly what happened in the Purim story, right? In the Purim story, if you understand the Purim story properly, it's not just, there was a decree, Haman, he's going to kill the Jews, and they got saved. How they say it, every Jewish festival is, they wanted to get us, we won, now let's eat, right? That's a definition of a Jewish festival. But it's not quite like that, right? The story of Esther was, and the story of the Megillah was, that the Jews actually lost their way a little bit. They went through a time where they lost their values. They assimilated into the Persian culture. They thought that what's much more important than living their values is to be successful in the eyes of the politicians, in the eyes of Ahasuerus, which is why they went to the banquet and they got so involved, which was politically a good strategy. But it wasn't just a strategy for them, it started to define them. Right? I'm saying it very briefly, but that's how the story unfolds. And then eventually when the decree came, which was really a wake-up call, and Mordechai says to Esther, you need to go to the king to sort this out. She says, I will go, but not now. I'll go in 3 days from now, because I want you to go and gather all the Jews in Shushan, and they should fast and pray for 3 days. Right? And Mordechai is trying to tell her that it's urgent. And she says, no, I can't go now. Why? Because Esther, who's a prophetess, realized that we need to get to the core problem. The core problem is not just the decree. The core problem is that they've lost their way, which is why this happened in the first place. It's a wake-up call. They need to reconnect to their values. She says, I'm not going to be successful in going to Ahasuerus now if the problem is not solved. If people haven't, as we said last week, people haven't responded, people haven't heeded the wake-up call. So first gather the Jews in Shushan, let them spend 3 days of reflection, let them reconnect to who they are, which they did, and then I'll go. I'll do what needs to be done, but needs to be done, not that that's the whole thing, not that that's defining us. And she does, and she goes, and she is successful eventually, right? But actually, it took a lot of time, and the truth is, if you read the story of the Megillah, it's a fascinating thing, which you've pointed out many times, that it talks about La'yudim hata or Rav Simcha, that the Jews suddenly became, they started to celebrate. When they started to celebrate, if you read the sequence of the story, they actually weren't out of the woods at all, because there was a looming war. What happened in the Megillah, in the Purim story, is that Haman had made a decree that on the 13th of Adar, which is today, there was a law enabling all the non-Jews to fight, to kill Jews. That was the law. And it had been signed into Persian law, right? When the downfall of Haman happened, which was Pesach time actually, there was still 11 months to go where this law was still there. And Ahasuerus said to Mordechai, you need to know that in Persian law, it's a problem now. Because once the law is sealed, you can't undo it. So this law still applies. Right, I've done what I can. I've hanged Haman and he's had a downfall, but actually the law still applies. And you know that when there's a opportunity for anti-Semitism, it gets taken up. Right? So all I can do for you is I can make another law that Jews can take up arms and fight back, but that's all I can do for you. So the Jews, people don't know this when they read the Purim story. I just think it was the downfall of Haman and everything was good and fine. It's not like that. There was almost a whole year where the Jews were scared because they had a war to fight, which was fought and won. But it was a whole was fought today on the 13th of Adar, which is why Purim is tomorrow, right? Because that's when they celebrated. Yet when the Haman fell, the Jews were celebrating. They had this war in their heads. They knew they were going to have to fight, but they were celebrating. Why? The depth of it is because they were celebrating because they realized that's okay. It's getting there. Why is it getting there? But they realized what the real problem was. The real problem was they lost their sense of identity. They lost their sense of values, which they had now reconnected to. And therefore they were confident, they were hopeful. Yes, there's going to be challenges ahead, but they were fine. So they had happiness, even though the story wasn't over. It doesn't sound like Ashram Megillah. It sounds like that happiness because it was all over. It wasn't. But they had happiness because they had a deeper sense of happiness, coming from within, coming from values. I'll just tell you an unbelievable story. This is an extreme, just because I was looking around for Purim stuff, so I found this amazing story. It's extreme. I mean, it is extreme. You know, we often tell stories that are extreme. I'm not sure, you know. But it's extreme about living values no matter what the outside world is. And it's about a Purim that took place in a concentration camp. And it's told by a Jew called Menachem Favilovitz, who was a Holocaust survivor. He was part of the Hasidic group called the Gera Hasidim. Aren't you connected to the Gera Hasidim, I think?
No,
Alexander Hasidim. Yeah, Polish also in Poland. He tells a story that they were in the barracks one night and it was Purim night and no one was in the mood of Purim, of course. Right? And suddenly two Jews got up and said, it's Purim tonight. It's Purim tonight. And in the camp, right, this guy got up and he said, he's telling the story, he said that we need to sing a Purim song. We need to connect to Purim happiness, right? I mean, can you imagine? Like, and they do. And the guy from memory just recites the blessings on the Megillah and they sing songs on the Megillah. And then they'll go back I missed that important detail of the story. The guy gets up and says, every generation there's a Purim, there's a Haman, and he says, Hitler's our Haman, and he'll never destroy the Jewish nation. just like Haman did, and so on and so forth, right? And then he finishes, they sing songs, and they go back to sleep. The next day, the commanders come in and start screaming, and they said, two people here spoke disparagingly about the Führer, about Hitler, right? Who was it? And no one said anything. And he says that the biggest fear at that moment was, and then he made them run outside. He says, you got 10 minutes to own up who it was last night, right? And he says that they were all scared that the guys were going to give themselves up. And in fact, one guy tried to give himself up because he was worried about the group. And they stopped him. They said, no, we're all responsible for each other. I mean, it's just amazing strength, right? They didn't let them, the friends didn't let them give themselves up. And he said, two miracles happened that night, that day, he says. That we all survived that ordeal, and we didn't give them up. Living with values to the extreme. Anyway, I just thought I'd show it with you because it's like an incredible, incredible story. Okay. So the first strategy of hope, of managing change is values. Because once we have values, values don't change. So therefore, values is like I said at the beginning of the pandemic, I said that we need to move from the world of uncertainty to the world of certainty. The world of uncertainty is the world of doing. The world of certainty is the world of values. So therefore, when change happens, we become uncertain. But when we connect to who we really are, we go back to the world of certainty and we learn to implement them, whatever the day brings. The second thing is hope and persistence. Because when we talk about living by values, it doesn't mean it's that easy, right? And we do fail. We fail often. It's not easy to live by values. Many of our values are very difficult to implement, right? I mean, an easy example, as I said before, if a person has a value that they're working with, to be nice, bless you, to be nice to other people, to be generous, to not lose their temper, that takes a lot of work, right? It takes a lot of work. Out of interest, that video, interview we had last night, it was interesting, a very fascinating point. My son asked the wife at the end, her name is Dana, he said to her that you didn't become religious, you didn't want to embrace any of the mitzvot, only what's good for the family. But if you had your way, like if you could wave a magic wand and make your husband secular back tomorrow morning, would you do it? So she says, not only wouldn't I do it, but even if you gave me $1 million, I wouldn't do it. And which was quite interesting because she never embraced that and it was difficult. They worked. And her reason was, she said, because one of the things he started doing when he embraced those values, she says, it's values which I don't necessarily embrace. I haven't embraced them, right? But he did start working on himself as a human being. He started to live by values, and he became a better husband and a better father. But it was years of work, right? And she said, I would never want to go back. Even though they still have the differences, like it's quite amazing, right? So this is it. So it takes a long time. But one of the things we need to know is this, that you see, when we define ourselves by what we do, then failure is very difficult. Because failure takes away from our successes. It doesn't have to. We can always change every failure into an opportunity, but it's much harder. If I define myself by a certain outcome, if that's what my world is, I need to achieve outcomes, I need to achieve a certain amount of earnings, I need to achieve a certain amount of whatever it is, right? And something happens, I'm not able to do it, takes away from my plan. It takes away from who I am. But if I define myself by values, then failure is just part of learning how to live by the values. It's part of the experience. It's part of the journey. There's a wonderful, beautiful, I mean, great leaders knew this. Even leaders fail often, right? Moshe Rabbeinu failed in his mission. God sent him to Egypt to redeem the Jewish people, and he went back to God and said, I'm sorry, I've made it worse. God said, no problem, keep going. It'll get better. Right, there was a Rosh Hashiva, a great rabbi who lived in America. His name was Rabbi Hutner. And this Rabbi Hutner wrote a powerful letter once to a disciple who had become very discouraged because this student of his was trying hard to improve and trying hard to master learning, and he was trying hard and he wasn't succeeding. He kept on failing. So he wrote him this letter. Rabbi Sachs brings it in one of his articles. He says the following. He says, a failing, I'll just read it to you. He says, a failing many of us suffer is that when we focus on high attainments of great people, we discuss how they complete in this or that area while omitting to mention the inner struggles they had previously raged within them. right? A listener would get the impression that these individuals sprang from the hand of their creator to a state of perfection. Know, however, my dear friend, that your soul is rooted not in the tranquility of the good inclination, but in the battle of the good inclination. He says we all have a struggle, and great leaders struggle too. And he brings many, many examples of leaders that didn't succeed, but they kept going. Why do they keep going? Because first of all, they kept going because while they were failing, they were living by their values. He said, this is the point. If you really define yourselves by the values that you live by, then those values are implemented as part of the failure. Part of the values is that you're not put off by failure. Part of the values is you have to struggle. Part of the values are that you need to overcome and you need to get up and try again. That's all part of the values. So therefore, there is no failure, right? The second part of that is that we really need to believe that we can do it. We need to believe in ourselves and believe in other people. Because often failure discourages us because we think we're not able to achieve those values. And the belief in ourselves is really important. So again, back to Purim, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was once asked, what lesson can we learn from the custom of dressing up on Purim? People wear costumes on Purim, right? That's a nice little minhag, it's a nice custom. I mean, it has many reasons. Part of the reason is because God was hidden sort of in time of the Purim story. That's why we wear costumes, like the idea of hiding and so on. But he answered, he says the same, he said the following. He said, on Purim you see many people dressed up in different types of costumes, right? One is a clown, one is an animal, and then one, you don't even know what he's wearing, right? Because he's just dressed up in a funny costume. So he's asked the question, he says, do you get angry with, upset with them? No, because you know it's just a costume, right? He says, in life we meet many people. One is impatient, one is angry, one is apathetic. This is not who they really are. It's just a costume. Deep in their heart, they're all warm Jews full of purity and beauty. We just need to interact with them with kindness and tenderness and take off their costume and reveal their pure soul. Right? That's a lesson you learn from the dressing up on Purim. So that's really, really important, not only for other people, but also for us, right? We all have failures, we all have difficulties, we all have challenges. We all feel anxious sometimes, we all get angry, we all get upset, we all get put off, we all get discouraged. So we need to know with other people that it's just a costume, but we also need to know with ourselves also just a costume. That's not who we really are. And it takes time to take off the costume. Some people get undressed quicker than others, that's all, right? So we have to keep taking it off. So that's part of the second thing. So managing change, therefore, change often brings a lot of failure, right? It doesn't come quickly. Again, back to last night's thing, that's why it was so powerful. Because part of what I asked them to do, and I really wanted them to do this, and it was so important, I wanted them to describe the struggle, right? Tell us how bad it was in the beginning. And it was, for a year, it was terrible, right? She even said, she wasn't sure which audience she was talking about. I said, you can say whatever you want, but she thought maybe she's talking to a religious audience. She said, I have to apologize for some of the things I'm going to say, but I need to paint the picture for you about what I used to think of religious Jews. I used to think about God. I used to think about mitzvot. So she said some terrible things, but that's good because that was part of the struggle. She said she shifted in her mindset now, but it is. So when change happens, and this is a perfect example of change, the whole world fell apart. The guy who thought she married was a different being all of a sudden, right? So it's a difficult thing. When change happens, we fail. We get angry, we get frustrated, and that's fine, but it doesn't define us, because if what defines us is our true self, because what are values? Values are things, as we spoke about many times, that live in the very core essence of who we are. Values is like Viktor Frankl says, it's the pursuit of meaning which lives and resides in the spark in the depth part of the soul. So that's who we are. The failure happens on the other layers of the soul. So therefore, the failure is just a costume. It takes time to take them off. It takes time to work through it. So managing change is when we fall apart, when change happens, that's okay. We need to know that it's okay. We need to re-examine our values. We need to re-examine our identity. And then we need to accept that it's okay. It's okay to be a mess for a while. But just don't define ourselves by that mess. We just need to work through it and then find a way to revisit and re-access our values and re-implement our values and therefore redefine ourselves and to strengthen ourselves even stronger than we were before. Right, so that's the second thing. Hope and persistence and belief in others and ourselves. And the third, of course, is destination, which goes back to the first, but nevertheless it's about what we do about it, right? So we know the famous idea, I'm sure I've said this before, the famous story of when the Jews left Egypt and came to the sea, right? And when they came to the sea, they had nowhere to go, they were trapped. And then they turned around and they saw the Egyptian army pursuing them. So they didn't know what to do, so they panicked, which is what people do. And then, because they were Jews, so they broke into four different opinions. There were four different groups, right? Some people say the miracle of the Red Sea was that there was only four different groups, right? 3 million Jews and only four opinions. Okay. But there were four opinions. One opinion was, let's just jump into the sea and end it all. The other one, let's just fight. Let's wage a war. We're not a very good army. Probably lose, but let's try. The other one said, let's surrender and just let the Egyptians take us back and do it and become slaves again. And the fourth one was, let's pray. Now, pray is a good thing, right? Because, you know, when all else fails, you've got to pray to God. He can say. Now, prayer is a very important thing, by the way, and certainly has its place. But God turns to Moses and he says, they're all wrong, every one of them. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisau. Tell the Jewish people to keep going. What do you mean keep going? There's nowhere to go. That's not your problem. You keep getting closer to your destination. And that's exactly what happened. The Talmud says that one of the great leaders at the time, Nachshon ben Aminadab, jumped into the ocean. He kept going until the waters up to his neck, and then the sea split. Right? Part of what we need to understand is that our values need to create goals. And that's what, you know, Stephen Covey talks about this, about creating a mission statement. What are my goals? But goals have to be divided into two. Goals are long-term goals and short-term goals. So we have to have an overall goal, the goal of to live our life by our values. What do I want to become? You know, what I want to study, what spirituality I want to embrace, what mitzvot I want to embrace, what character traits do I want to really work on, and so on and so forth. And then we need to keep moving. Keep moving. We need to know that even though there's an ocean in front of us, a turbulent ocean, which seems insurmountable, but we can take one step towards our goal. We can't maybe today reach our goal because there's a whole ocean there. But we can take one step. And we take one step towards that goal, eventually the sea splits and we're able to get there. But for now, when there's a huge ocean in front of us, change has happened, our world is falling apart, it just looks like there's no hope. But we have our goal. And God's response is, just keep going. What does keep going mean? It doesn't keep going, reach there today. It means, what can you do today? You wake up in the morning, things are really hectic, things have changed, things are chaotic. You ask yourself one question. I have my values and those values create a goal for me. What can I do today to take one step? What can I do this hour to take one step closer to who I am, to what my goal is? Which connects to the things we've spoken about many times about mindful living. That's really what mindfulness is all about. Mindfulness is about letting go of yesterday, not worrying about tomorrow, and maximizing the now, maximizing what I can do now, being in the moment. This is a day that I have. This is, I don't know what happened yesterday. Tomorrow there's another day. Who knows what tomorrow will bring. But what can I do now? How can I get the greatest meaning out of now? So those are the three, I think those are the three fundamental things that we learned, that we can reflect on coming out of last year, about how change can be managed well. You need to have values. We need to have hope and persistence, not be put off by failure. And we need to wake up every morning and say, Daber el bnei Yisrael v'yisau, work to the Jewish people and let them travel, let them move towards their goal. Not even prayer. Prayer is a great thing, but prayer is not a response to crisis or response to chaos. Prayer is not something you do when all else fails. That's not what prayer is. Prayer is a thing you do which is helpful to build your values, which is helpful to connect, which is helpful to call out to God and so on. But it's not because I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to pray. No, if you don't know what to do, keep moving forward. Keep taking one step towards your goal. I'll just end off because I happened to come across this article, which talks about managing change and upheaval in one's life. Some of them are connected to things we said before. I think those are the three fundamental pillars, but these are just some. I'll just run through them. It's eight ideas. Right. First of all, just eight things which this author, she sort of advises someone to. It's also just smaller things, but just also really, really important. The one is difference between good and bad, which means, in other words, sometimes when upheaval happens, change happens, just everything is bad. So we should just sit and say, hold on a sec, yes, it's bad, but there's also some good things. Let's separate them out and focus on those that are good. A very important thing, and I think that has to do with also not being put off by failure, is to mourn the losses so you can move on. Sometimes we just have to accept things. right? And part of what often stands in the way for us not be able to move on is we just don't accept that things have changed. And sometimes we just need to accept reality. We have to accept that expectation is not the same. And mourn that change. It's almost like a grieving process, but we have to do that, right? Let go of the past, of course, is release, right? Connection with God, that's the concept of value we spoke about before. Very important is we can never do this alone. We need to always help, have the help of others. Get a support system and ask for help when you need it. And then the sixth is what we talked about today. Recognize that your core value as a human being is not affected by whether you are married, healthy, employed, or popular. Your core value of human being is the fact that you are who you are, right? A nice thing is, she's talking about more relationship stuff, but she says, find some pleasurable activity that isn't dependent on other people. Like, in other words, what can you do that doesn't depend on others and so on? And of course, number eight is what we spoke about at the end. Take life 1 hour and one day at a time. So those are just some of the things that I think important to reflect on coming out of major change. But this will happen again, not, God forbid, pandemic, but change will always happen. And therefore, these things are important to reflect on and to think about how we internalize them. So on that note, we'll stop here. Wish everyone a Purim Sameach.
Thank you.
And a good week. And we'll see. We'll continue next week. Okay. Yep. We do have the Megillah readings of a Purim, and we have that program of Vaucluse. If someone still wants to book, they can. And